CliffCentral.com.
All right, there's some Blinding Lights by The Weeknd. Weeknd, weekday, does it make any difference to you now? Do you even know which one is which? All right, let's get cracking. We got the whole team here this morning. Bulelo's in the studio in Joburg. Sia is in Durban. And we are talking to you. But Alan Ford, Alan Ford is going to be joining us in a second to tell us what he's up to, how he's keeping busy. Don't laugh, Mbulela. That's what we call him. That's what we've called him all the way through. And and he's been locked in with his parents. And sounded to me when he called me the other day like he has some funny stories to tell. And Alan was the one who said to me, what happens when people are married and there's one of them who's cheating during a time like this? Because you're going to find out about it. There's no way you can hide it when you're in this close proximity with somebody, right?
I totally agree with that. I think we may have spoken about like that. This is a horrible time for anybody having trying to get saucy nookie on the side.
Yeah, look, I'm not generally sympathetic to people who are having affairs. So let's be clear about that. It's not like I'm saying, oh, well, you know, they should be allowed to have their affairs. And it's a horrible situation, but I think keeping it secret now is going to be increasingly difficult.
Alternatively, what we could do is I'm a solution-based thinker, is let's bring the side lady into the fray now, you know?
Oh, come on, Bulelo, be practical for a second. Do you know what you're doing?
Well, these things happen, Gareth. Polyamory is a very real thing. Let's not live like it's 1944 with the Enkhia Gak lording over us.
Come on.
Polyamory is amongst us.
There's no woman in the world and no man in the world who wants to share. Otherwise, there's something going on there. And those open relationships, as they call them, they never last.
Mm-hmm.
They never work. All right, are you going to try and get Alan Ford on for us?
Yeah, we'll get Alan in the mix.
I want to see what he has to say. I'm testing my internet speed this morning because I know people were busy showing off their internet yesterday. I even got some stuff on Twitter and Instagram from people saying, oh, I've got a 200 megs per second. It's like boasting. So I'm still looking at a solid 18 or 19 Mbps, which I don't think is anything to be embarrassed about. Oh, thank you, Mbulelo. I'm glad that you're not embarrassed either about my otherwise. Adam sent me this from Greenville, South Carolina. He sent me a picture of a whole lemon harvest that he and his wife have pulled off the trees where they live. My wife, Dinda, that's her name, and I, listen to your show every morning from Greenville, South Carolina. When I heard you talk about the coronavirus remedy, I had to get some of the action. So my wife is from Pretoria. I'm from Dudley in the UK, and she converted me to an avid listener. She thinks I've gone too far this time. What do you think? And there's a bowl of 100 lemons, and they're going to make Damon lemon surprise. That's their, you know, to fend off the coronavirus, they're going to use that remedy. That's what they're going to be working on.
Certified, foolproof. But yeah, the guys in Churn are probably using that as well. Scientifically cleared.
Definitely. Gareth, I've had this song stuck in my head for days, but I have no idea who it is. Thank you, and please let me know who the artist is. That was The Weeknd, Blinding Lights. Morning. Someone's background noise is distracting the hell out of me. Never thought you'd be the biggest and fattest. You would be the biggest, fattest in the world, Mbulelo. I thought Gareth was more of a fattest than you. So no, Mbulelo seems to be stealing my crown in that respect. And you know what? I'm okay to give it up.
Well, I just want to give some pushback there. I'm poor healthist. I don't like anybody. I'm not so concerned about what people frame. It's health.
Don't you try to assuage your guilt.
Yeah, but also don't get fat.
No, listen, I'm on your side. And I always say to people, the reason I'm rude about obesity is because of the same thing. I did some stuff for the Heart and Stroke Foundation a few years ago, like 10 years ago, and they gave me some horrifying statistics of how many South Africans die and are at risk and put themselves into our healthcare system because basically, there's stuff they can control that they're not controlling, and they get themselves into very, very dangerous situations from a physical health point of view. So I'm not going to defend it now, as I have before, But the basic idea is you've got to be responsible for your health. Otherwise, I might be a little mean to you. And that's a tiny price to pay. If you guys want to live in a state where your neighbors rat you out, then for me to complain about your obesity is hardly inconceivable and horrible. There's an interesting point being made by somebody on WhatsApp this morning. The lockdown has brought out the social justice warrior as well as the government sheeple mentality in almost every millennial and baby boomer. That's from Barry. You know what, Barry? I couldn't agree more. You see people immediately deferring to a government that just 2 weeks before this coronavirus outbreak, they were completely opposed to. These are the same people who will go and buy e-tags now. So if you want to live in that world, that's fine. I'm not going to comply. Good luck trying to get me to comply, I say while lifting my coffee cup this morning. I'm not one of those people who believes in the wisdom of the masses or in the right of government to enforce authoritarian rule over people, even in a crisis. So you're not going to persuade me, I'm afraid. Doesn't work that way, not in my book. Okay, we're trying to reconnect with Sia because his sound this morning was terrible.
So, yeah, we got Alan in the way.
Okay, good. Alan Ford's going to join us. And then, as I said a little later on, the three people who you met during our Epson Entrepreneurs feature just the other day are back to answer a few questions. We got some of those via email. And to talk generally about how business is responding, small business especially, is responding to this coronavirus outbreak and now the lockdown, and precisely what we can and can't do in this situation. Hey, I'm part of Essential Services. This is from, there's no name attached. I was driving to work this morning and I saw someone spit on the side of the road. This is a concern. We have no control over human behavior and that is a concern. Okay, well, if someone spits on the side of the road, what, you're going to stop and lick it up? Sure, it's gross, but that is not a place that the coronavirus is going to be spread. Oy, oy, oy.
On the side of the road. That's not the biggest problem.
Tubby was agreeing with me. Holy shit, Sia, can you and Pumi please chill? You are those people. Snitches get stitches, bitches. Mind your business. You talk as if people are walking around complexes licking your gates and your door handles. Just chill. Bunch of rats with you there, Gareth. I can't believe what I'm hearing. You know what, Tubby? So I've just realized I do this show with a bunch of people who really want the government in their lives. Good for you guys. Tabiso and I will go and live in our own little – we'll create our own Bantustan. And, you know, Tabiso and I will go and live there.
Listen, once you and Tabiso stop paying taxes, then I'll know that you don't believe in government. Don't get on your high
horse. I don't have an option because they've got a monopoly on violence.
Oh, is that really?
You don't believe me? Go and look at how they're beating up people in the township who don't want to comply. Glad you're on their side and not on the people, the citizens of this country's side.
Yeah, listen.
Wait till they come at you with a baton.
You pseudo anarchist. When you stop paying taxes, I'll know you're real about it. Don't give me that. You're either about it or you're not.
Okay, count me in as well. If this old man insists on going to his church today, I'm definitely calling the police. I cannot let this man put my health at risk. Sure, okay, so this is from Pihleng. So Pihleng is on the authoritarian side. So far it's Pihleng, Mbulelo, Sia, and Pumi on the side of let's keep everybody in line, let's spy on people, and let's make sure that we keep ourselves safe by giving all our power and our civil liberties over to government. And then on the other side, it's just me and Tubby so far. If people don't follow the lockdown rules, the lockdown will be extended, as it won't work properly, which affects everyone. It's a domino effect. Dory. Is that our Dory? Or is it a different Dory? No, it's a different Dory, I think. Yeah, I get that, and I don't think it's unreasonable for people to mostly try and do the right thing. I mean, I told you I went out on Sunday. I haven't been out since. And I saw two cars, and one was an ambulance, and one was the Metro Police. So it's not as if there's a bunch of people all trying to break the law. I think most of us are smart enough to know we're part of a society and we should do our best to keep our place in that society or to hold in place the society around us. But telling on your neighbors, hey, boy, I'm never going to be comfortable with that. Sia, you back? Let's just see if we can connect with Sia.
I think he is back. But to quote that a tremendous book. If people haven't read it, 1984, of course, a book about just terror of governments and control, puritanical sort of control. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. So that it can go that way. We do need to be careful of the strong arm of the law. We always need to keep that in check.
Okay, so you're basically saying, although you are on that side, you are sometimes brought to the middle.
Oh, well, I think nothing should be unadulterated. We've seen where that can lead.
Yeah. All right. Have we got Alan Ford yet? Where is he? Is he sleeping?
Ah, there we go. I think
hello, Stuartla.
This is really interesting. How are you doing?
How are you doing, Al?
Well, can you hear me clearly?
Hello. That's not bad at all. I mean, it'll work. It's like a bad phone line, but it'll work. So who are you in lockdown with, Alan?
So first, I'm locked down with my parents, which is always fun. they don't drink, so it's terrible.
Are you drinking?
No, you can't drink, but I'm actually. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to drink, they're not really drinkers. So if I wanted to have a party night or go dancing, it's not going to happen. So,
well, Al, I've got bad news for you. There's nowhere for you to go dancing or partying at the moment. It must be killing you because you're a bit of a social person. And you like to get out there. You like to keep yourself amused. I know this is something on your agenda. So are you handling things or are you bored already?
Do you know what? I must tell you, I'm firstly, I've been busy. I'm working, so that's a good. That's a good thing. So I spent Friday working. I spent yesterday working. Mm-hmm. We've done some interesting, fun things, Gareth. So, for example, we're having a come down with me every second night, and then one of us has to cook. Sofina's like my second mom. Has been with us for over 30 years. So Sofina still is with us as well.
And so she's living with you guys. So it's the four of you.
Yes, living with us. Yeah, so there are four of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, we're playing cards, we're playing games, we are, you know, Gary, if this happened 15 years ago, it would be a very different scenario because, firstly, we don't have things like Showmax and Netflix.
Yeah.
We don't have the internet, the games, the apps, the music. We're very blessed because we have a lot of distractions. We really do.
But you told me that you told me you and your family and what's her name, Sofina, that the four of you are playing a game where you all get to do like a come dine with me night where you all decide to cook for everybody else. So each of you gets a turn.
And then you make your menu and you do your sauces, your mate. Firstly, we're all going to blow up like houses. Everyone's going to get fat. I think people, they're doing exercise in their room and they're jogging up four stairs. It's not that extensive exercise that we need in our life. But the come down is very simple. You put your menu out and then people vote and at the end you win a prize. The prize will probably be an Easter egg or something. I don't know. But you know what? But as difficult as this is, there's a lot of good things that you can. First, it's nice to hear silence because wherever I walk outside the house, there's nothing going on in the streets. You don't hear cars. You hear nothing. You can reflect. But Gareth, I don't mean to be a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
Can I be a bummer?
Go on.
Let me be a bummer. You know, it was only the day before yesterday that this personally touched my life when an aunt of mine was rushed and put on a ventilator.
Oi.
All right. It looks like she's all right and she's making a recovery with this. It was only yesterday that I saw that our colleague, Iona Minton, has just come off a ventilator.
Oh, wow.
Okay. It was only yesterday that an editor of Dossier magazine's father was the third, a Facebook friend, and I've known her for years, was the third case who passed away in this country.
Mm.
And it was only yesterday that a cousin in America who's 12 years old has just come off her ventilator. So those are four cases that I know of in the last 48 hours.
Are all of them coronavirus cases?
All four coronavirus.
Wow.
All four coronavirus, including Iona Minton. And Irina wrote a long thing on Facebook about it, saying she doesn't like to expose her personal life.
Yeah.
But what it is like day one, day two, then the ventilator, then coming off the ventilator, in the ICU. So it's, what I'm saying is, this is, it's all of a sudden come to light. And you see the buffoons, the idiots, I call them the simpletons, the no-brainers, still doing stupid things, and that is not listening. And this is the time where you've got to listen.
Yeah, I mean, Bulelo and I had a big argument about this earlier, but obviously people's mental health at the moment is something that we're concerned with as well. Not everybody has great conditions to live in. Some people are not only poor and in squalor, but they also live in families where maybe there's, you know, there's alcoholism, there's domestic violence. There's a lot of stuff that we need to take into consideration that makes this much, much bigger a problem for some people than how to amuse yourself day in and day out.
And I hear you. The question is, if you're going to, if you're not going to find a way to do this, okay, do this. There is a very good chance that you'll get sick, and there's a very good chance you'll die. That is how simple this is. You know, people have got to start to realize that, but at least there are shelters for women that they've opened. At least there are, if you are a drunk, you can just go to a member of the police and say, listen, I've got a problem. Get me into a school with the other people that
can
are
you,
living
is,
on the street.
Is that possible? I mean, can are there social services that are available to people at this time?
Absolutely. Now, that's the thing, is that you're able to you can do, and you might just have to stay with a lot of people that are off the street. But I promise you, the police people manning the schools where these homeless people are staying, so you'll put yourself there. Or report them, and if someone acts up there, and I'm not being funny, and you live in those circumstances, throw them into jail. And I don't think they're going to survive. So that's another option.
Sure.
So you'll learn really quickly. You learn quickly. So there's a lot of social stuff. Yes, and you're right, Gareth. You're nailing it. This will address a lot of issues in families, in society, but there really isn't a choice to what has to be done. And again, I say, if we had not seen, I've known about, we're not stupid, Gareth. When four cases happened in the last 48 hours, that I realized this is not a joke, and the one is that third person that passed away yesterday.
Wow. And, that's really close to home. All right, Al, thank you so much. I'm going to have to let you go because the phone line is not so great, and it's...
I apologize.
No, it's fine. You've obviously got terrible internet where you are, so despite having Netflix...
I've got great internet. I've got full internet. What are you talking?
Oh, okay. Well, I thought we'd have a better connection with you. We're clearly not.
Well, listen, we'll get it right. We'll do this again.
Yeah, well, next time we get your internet sorted out. All right, thanks, Al. Nice to speak to you.
Cheers, Al. Be good.
Bye. Bulelo, you think that's funny, huh? You're finding this all very amusing.
I do find you probing Ustudla quite hilarious.
Let me just tell you quickly, in case you don't know, let's say you are a small business at the moment, or even a big one, and you may be just an employer or an employee, and you're looking for guidance. We're all going to be trying to find our way through this mess. We've produced something that I think might be very interesting to you on a personal level, but we know COVID-19 is affecting the whole world, and as the situation appears to be getting more intense, there are lots of uncertainties in the immediate future. How will the pandemic affect the economy, businesses, individuals in these changeable times? Well, we've got a brand new 4-part series, which we only recorded last week, called In Flux, in which Gary Hertzberg, from The Laws of Life, that's a show that's one of our best shows in Cliff Central history. He talks to Fluxman's attorneys to find out about how businesses can, you know, try to face the threat of shutting down, in some cases, the rights and obligations of employers and employees, how to navigate money issues like debt obligations, school fees, and the pandemic's impact on existing and future contracts. So if you want to hear about that, this is probably the most useful thing you could do with your time. And they're short little podcasts with the best people in the business. Listen to Influx now. Go to cliffcentral.com on our app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it under the Laws of Life. Great lawyers giving you great advice. And getting that for free in a time like this will also save you some money. And by the way, we are staying connected. Alan Ford may have a terrible connection, but Bulelo's connection in the studio is amazing, and that is because of iConnect. People wanted to know yesterday when we were busy boasting about how good our connection was. Well, iConnect, you can too for just 199 Rand per user per month with no contract or setup fee. If that sounds too good to be true, it really is awesome, and there are no hidden clauses. There's no catch here. These guys are amazing. Here's the deal. You get a remote voice extension. You get a soft phone or a desktop app. You get 200 minutes free voice bundle and a free iConnect inbound number. You'll also be able to port an existing number for free and get free extensions to extension calls. That's right. You can contact iConnect South Africa on 010-271-3995. That's 010-271-3995. Email them at remote@iConnectSA.co.za or just go to the website iConnectSA.co.za for more information. Bulelo, say something so we can hear how clear you sound on this internet connection.
Well, I look ravishing this morning.
Yes,
how did
do.
That come across?
Well, you've probably been for a 3 kilometer run as well, haven't you?
No, I had a workout at 3:30 though. The office is the perfect workout space.
Yes, by the way, how is it going using Sia's office as your gymnasium?
Look, I have to be honest. What I'm trying to do is sweat as much into Sia's office as possible.
Stop.
Because then it's not where I'm sleeping. So, and it's got the best sun, so it'll dry really quickly.
Sia, you're going to get back to your office and it's going to smell heavenly.
He's revolting.
Yeah, I know. Okay, at least we've got you back on, and it doesn't sound like your internet's too bad. Nice job, Sia.
But Sia, you know what will drown the smell out is the drying of my underwear.
Stop.
I'm ready to bring in HR for something like this.
yeah, we may have to. all right, just one quick thing before we get to our guests for this morning. And I think this is, for those people who've been listening for a while, this is probably going to be an interesting reunion of the four of us. I spoke to Sibu Mabena, to Linda Mwegetsi, and to Roxy Ferreira, who are all entrepreneurs. They've all got their own businesses. And if you remember, Sibu is in a communications and media business. So is Linda, and Roxy has got her own shop. And we're going to talk to them about being entrepreneurs and Epson ambassadors, mostly because they have probably experienced one of the most volatile weeks, even months, in history, and how they're weathering these storms is, I think, quite an interesting topic for discussion. So we'll start off with you, Sibu. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear. Go ahead.
Oh, cool. I'm alive. I'm very good. It's really great to be waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Everybody else is taking this as 21 Saturdays.
Really not. How are you doing? Last time we spoke to you, we weren't even in lockdown yet, but we knew that the coronavirus pandemic was going to take hold, and we'd seen what it had done internationally. But, you know, since then, we've got even more information, and it's really tough.
It is quite tough, and I must say I'm really blessed to have escaped New York when I did.
Yes.
And I'm now out of quarantine. It's been, 19 days since I got back, and I'm safe. All the people that I've been around are safe.
Right.
And I am self-isolating. so it's cool that we can live to see another day. So I think it's all this information that we have. We finally have a roadmap on how we're going to tackle this as a country. And all we have to do is play our individual parts so we can just go back to life as we knew it, whether it's adapting to a new normal. But let's just all play our parts.
But Sibo, what's happening with your clients? Because I know from our point of view, there are some of them who are smart and proactive, and they're trying to hold on to their share of voice at the moment, and they're trying to make a positive difference, and they're using this crisis to do what they can for their own community, for their own customers. Mm-hmm. And those people are terrific, and they're few and far between. But most people in marketing, media, advertising, they've just frozen. They're frozen either in fear or in horror, but they're not sure exactly what to do. Is that your experience too?
With some clients it is, and with others, surprisingly, we're actually doing quite a lot of work. Like you say, people are trying to hold on to their share of voice, or even use this time to increase it. Some are quite innovative, some are quite creative, and some are quite bold. They come to us and they say, hey, give us something. We want to do something, keeping people's eyes glued to their TV or their laptops through the digital shows or music even. So we're amplifying quite a lot of different types of clients' campaigns. So I think we're quite fortunate in that we're able to adjust and be agile and respond to briefs really quickly, because everybody wants to be within the 21-day lockdown. It's like, guys, it's definitely going to extend. But there are clients who are bold enough to say, let's continue working.
Yeah, and there's a lot of emergency communications that need to go out at this point. You know, we all are kind of watching with bated breath what's happening with big businesses, because it's not just the small ones like you guys and us. It's also the big businesses that are they're confused as to what's next. And how do we communicate with people without being part of the panic? How do we let people know that we've got plans, that we've put into place certain procedures that hopefully will keep us in business? There's no textbook case on this. Roxy, how about you? You've actually got a shop. How are you managing to run your business remotely, and how much of it have you had to trim down to its bare bones? Are you looking at perhaps dealing with having to let some people go? Because this is a reality some businesses are also going to have to face in the next while.
Hi, Darren. Yeah, it's been super hectic. Obviously, we've had to close our retail stores because of the lockdown. But we're just trying to make the most of it and take everything online. Luckily, I do have an online store, an online platform. And yeah, so we've had to take everything online and then just communicate positively with our customers and just let them know that, yeah, we obviously can't do deliveries and stuff during this time, but we can, once the 21 days hopefully is over, we can deliver then. And yeah, I think it's all about just being positive. Like, I feel like there's so many negative corona things going around that you just get into your own head and you just can go crazy if you watch the news all day. So we're trying to send positive mailers out to our customers every second day. That don't necessarily have to do with fashion only, but just are like positive and send out a good message. And then in terms of business and letting go of people, I haven't let go of anyone yet and I don't have any plans to. I'm trying to put systems into place to let my girls work from home, and do alternative things that we haven't done previously. So yeah, it's just been about adapting and changing what my business does and finding new routes. So I feel like in all of this negative hecticness, all these positives are coming out because new parts of my business are being formed because I've had to think out of the box. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Linda Mwiketsi is LM Relations. They have a collective 20 years of experience in a 100% black-owned company with extensive experience in corporate and lifestyle PR. Now, what has happened in PR, Linda? Last time we spoke, you were optimistic, but you were also a little bit cautious. How have things changed for you in the last week and a half?
So, hi, Gareth. Good morning to you and your listeners. So, my business is not only based in PR. The PR side of it is still relatively okay. However, you know, digital media campaigns, so we've had a few influencer campaigns cancel because brands just don't know, you know, what the future is, and they don't know if they want to communicate during this particular time.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a down run. The eventing...
No, go ahead. Eventing?
...side of things are completely shut down. Mm. There's nothing we can do there. And, you know, we've actually had to opt to look at alternative revenue. Other businesses that I did have before in one of my other companies that I've had to actually relook at, reopening. So I've just had to be smart about what I do.
We do have questions for you guys, which were sent in from a number of our listeners and people who listened to the podcast that you were on last time. So I'm going to open this up. We'll start with Sibu. How were you certain that your business idea would make a difference when you started things? Because a lot of idealistic people start a business because they want to make a difference, but you also need to make money, and there are practical realities. But that making a difference is actually tremendously important, right, Sibu?
Yeah, wow. So I can't say I was certain, but I was able to confirm that I was doing the right thing when, one, clients were satisfied, and two, the proof of payments were rolling in. and I also had to, I got to a stage where I had to scale up because there was so much work coming in. So something said you're doing it right. But my deepest desire was always to do it better and also to be able to start employing other people. So I can't say I'm making a difference in the, like a huge difference in the world, but am I making a difference in the lives of the people that I employ, the suppliers that I have on retainers, and then the people who do our campaigns, students, average normal people who are micro influencers for us? Yes, we are. So was I certain when I started? No. But did I become sure of what we were doing along the way? Yes.
I'm going to ask you, Roxy, about Peruse Fashions and this question. What type of research did you do into your possible venture before you actually opened it up? Did you spend a lot of time doing research, kind of looking at case studies in fashion, even the retail aspect of it? How much time did you spend doing all of that? You've just got to unmute your microphone there. So just go to the bottom of the screen. There we go. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, so for me, it was all about research. I started my brand as a young 22-year-old that literally knew nothing because I didn't actually study fashion. So it was all about research and also speaking to people, speaking to my customers, researching fabrics, researching factories, researching about manufacturing, and then just speaking to the people I thought would be my customers, and seeing what they want, you know, and what they're interested in. But yeah, researching and communicating with customers is probably like the biggest thing for me, because without that, you don't have a start line. So yeah.
Linda, can you answer the next question for us when it comes to your businesses? How do you market your services without any funds or seek out clients without funds, you know, especially at the start of a business cycle when you need to do as much as you can and get as much as you can for free?
It's a very tricky question because I thought going into business for the first time back in 2013, I always thought, you know, I just need to get, you know, my business out there in the media and people will jump on. People buy a concept, a product, a service from people they like.
Yeah.
So it's very important that you form relationships with people who will support you, whether they believe in what you offer or not. So people always take chances with people that they like. So it's important that you hone relationships, you make relationships with the right people who can do things for you. And you just maintain those relationships. I've had a relationship with Naspers since the launch of WeChat. We assisted them with launching WeChat into the market. Mm-hmm. That's been an existing relationship where we even did Vuv. We did a go-to-market strategy for them for Vuv into the market. So it's relationships are completely key in the industry that we work in, and that's essentially how you market yourself, word of mouth.
How can you improve communication through technology, Sibu? This is right up your street.
I was in 7 meetings yesterday. I counted. I didn't leave my kitchen table. 9 o'clock. So 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
7 meetings. So the use of the internet is so key. Eskom, keep us on, please. But it's WhatsApp, it's phone calls, yeah. It's different apps. There are so many group communication apps. House Party is even one of them. Zoom call, Microsoft Meet. I'm learning them all. Google Hangouts. Thank you, Cliff Central, for teaching me Google Hangouts.
Yeah.
Because these apps have always been there. It's not something that came out as a result of Corona. So what's going to be very interesting to is how the economy adjusts and moves forward post this 21-day lockdown period, because a lot of companies are now being proven to by their employees that, guys, we can actually work remotely and still be super productive. So improving on communication is just utilizing the tools that have always existed, learning them and kind of adapting them to your environment, be it a small business or a big business or a solo business or you talking to your customers. Mm-hmm. You could get on, like, Roxy could be doing consultations via Zoom for clients and making their clothes so that in 20 days or how many days we have left? In 16 days, whatever it is, their outfits are ready. There's so many cool ways to utilize technology in this time, just like we are.
Yeah, I love that answer. And Roxy, I'm going to come to you in a moment if you want to add something to that. But I think in case anybody's just stumbled onto the discussion this morning, the reason to do this is because I've noticed the most successful entrepreneurs are people who are always talking to other entrepreneurs to try and find out whether they've missed something, whether there's a shortcut, whether they can benefit from the lessons that someone else has had to have and learn the hard way. And if you just follow the literature, and if you think you've got a plan and you don't talk to other people, you often miss stuff. So if you're listening to us now wondering what this is, it's an opportunity for all of us to learn. Anybody who's got an idea, maybe your business isn't crystallized yet, maybe it's already in play, maybe you're going through a very tough time at the moment, there could be just one thing that either Roxy or Linda or Sibu says this morning that might be able to help you. And if we can do that, it will all have been worth it. Roxy, there's a question here about mistakes. What are some of the mistakes that you'd advise other entrepreneurs don't repeat?
Ooh, mistakes. So mistakes are unavoidable. Like, obviously, they're going to happen along the line. Mine would be when you start making money, or even before you start making money, to be conservative in your spending. And obviously put systems in place that help you save your money. Because when I started, I didn't have any help and I never studied what I was doing. So I threw myself in the deep end a lot.
Yeah.
that's how I learned. So I was like, let me just do it and hopefully it works out. And yeah, the one thing was I wasn't conservative enough about how I spent. So yeah, that was like a big thing for me. And yeah, saying that, since we are all here for Ethem, that's one thing that like I've loved about them and working with them, is their products are so economical. Like the printer I'm using right now, gives you 3 years supply of ink.
Wow.
So it's just like little things like that. So
yeah, you make a very good point that I'd like to throw in some advice on, is don't buy cheap, crappy equipment. Like rather get one good piece of equipment that lasts you a long time, that you don't feel you're being ripped off on because it breaks after 3 months, or because you have to have people come in and service it the whole time and none of your staff can use it properly.
Yeah.
It doesn't connect to your network. You rather buy the right thing at the beginning and spend a little bit of money so that you get your money's worth in the long run.
And also that all comes down to research, like what we were speaking about. Like it's not only researching the industry you're going into, it's also researching systems within your business that are going to help your business grow. So yeah, that's like, you know, in all businesses, obviously, when you're starting a business, you are going to make mistakes. But for me, it's being conservative in your spending, doing lots of research, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And the one point you were making and saying, speaking to other entrepreneurs, like that has been life changing for me. Like in the world we live in, we can't do things on our own. And when I started working with other fashion brands, like I've made two best friends through the industry that also have fashion brands. So now we do pop-up shops together. We sell each other stuff on our different online platforms. Now during this tough time with the whole corona thing that's happening, we've literally sat on Zoom and had meetings and brainstormed how we can work as a collective to still help our businesses continue to grow. So yeah, I think it's, to grow your business, you have to speak to other entrepreneurs, but also to keep your business going, you have to have relationships with other entrepreneurs and help each other.
One last question, and then we'll wrap this up and probably pick it up in a few weeks again. But Linda, outsourcing, how do you know when something is too big for you to handle or it's not in your area of expertise? How do you know when to bring in outside help?
So I'm exactly like Roxy. In fact, I agree with her lessons around, you know, throwing yourself in the deep end and trying to figure it out later. So that was one of the lessons that I learned around outsourcing. And it started internally within the business where, you know, I thought, that bad. And so you have to submit your tax returns. So, and then I realized I actually have to spend money, pay someone to do this, you know, where I was trying to save some money. So, that then, you know, extended into providing services for clients. And I realized that, you know, the more saturated our particular industry gets, the more options clients have. Meaning that you have to be the best at what you do. And there's no better offering than a collaborative offering of people who know what they're doing.
Well, that's the perfect note to end this on, because I don't think I could have said it better. So Linda and Sibu and Roxy, thank you all so much for talking to us. These are three entrepreneurs who I think we can all benefit from hearing from. And just in case you don't know, the reason that we're having this conversation is because Epson are making it possible. Epson makes some amazing equipment and some great products, and you can go and find out more by going to their website and looking them up. They're involved in South African business, especially small South African entrepreneurship businesses. And Linda Mueketsi from LM Relations, Roxy Ferreira from Peruse Fashions, and Sibu Mabena from the Duma Collective. Thank you all very, very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Garrett.
All right. Have a good lockdown. Look after yourselves.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Very good. I just spoke to Dori, who's on our team as well. I saw a message from her. She's going to try and get Iona Minton, who Annan Ford was talking about. Iona used to be a personal financial fitness, I'm sure she's still involved in that world, guru. And Iona is one of the people who contracted COVID-19 and has had a hell of a story. So we're going to see if we can get Iona on sometime this week to speak to her. Goodness. Yeah.
That's quite a story.
It's a hell of a story, especially because I was blissfully unaware of it until Alan told me. And now I see that she's been through hell and back. All right, coming up, Anthony Medera, who's my co-host on Blind History. It's one of our biggest success stories in terms of the amazing content that we try to deliver to you. Sometimes we hit the mark exactly right. Blind History has been given plenty of attention internationally and locally for the what we believe the quality of the content that we're producing here. I hope you enjoy it. We're on to season 3, and there's a new episode that's taking place today. So stick around for that. A new episode of Blind History. But Anthony Medera is going to join us just now. We'll find out what he's doing under lockdown, because everybody's story's different. In fact, there he is. He's just knocked on our door. Come and knock on our door. Hey, Anthony Medera, how's it? Anthony? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, how are you, man?
Very well, and you?
Good. How's the lockdown going?
It's been good so far, I would suppose. It's still early days, so let's see how it goes.
Yeah, man.
But we've been I'm working with my colleagues. It's my son and Kate in the same office.
And
so that's a bit challenging.
Haven't you got kids running around as well?
Yeah, so Rachel's two. So we actually have four kids under this roof.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
So we've got Joshy, who's a 12-year-old, and so we've got to make sure that he's on top of his game with school.
Yeah.
So, and then the two older kids are varsity.
Sure. So what's happened with varsity? What are they doing?
So they're connecting. They're quite organized. So I think they started again, particularly the beginning of April. And everything is online, so they're quite organized. The schools are also, funny enough, what was very interesting is Rachel, little two-year-old,
yeah.
Their teacher calls in every Monday for a little jumper session.
Oh, wow, so they're like doing physical exercise on Skype.
Yeah, they do something like that on Skype. And then my old does some drama lessons as well. So.
Wow.
Like a webinar.
It's amazing. So everybody's really everybody's busy. No one's just languishing around the house watching movies.
No, not at all. And then what I did was we just before the lockdown we bought a dartboard and also table tennis. So we have our Olympic championships and whatever we need to do.
So
except they're chipping the holes into my garden with a golf club. That's not so great.
So, Ant, what's happening with Taylor Blinds and Shutters during this time? How's business going, and what have you had to do to rationalize things to keep in operation?
Yeah, so last week was hectic. So it was something I've never really felt in business, because we had to look at scenario planning, so cash flow predictions. That's the most important, because when you have zero income as a manufacturer, then you basically got to manage and try and survive with the cash flow that you have.
Yeah.
And so we met as a team. You know, my partner, we've got the execs of Trellidor Innovations and Trellidor. We meet once a week for a cash flow meeting. We also meet once a week for a steering committee meeting. So to see where we are. So we've planned now for the shutdown. So we've managed everything to be able to pay all our staff, and there's nobody that's let go, and so everything is organized till the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
Team. Now, if we told we're going to be in further lockdown post 17, then we've got what we call phase two that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we're starting to look at staff, where we look at a possible cut in salaries. So once again, no layoffs, those type of situations. And we very much try and support our wage staff, our factory workers as well. So overall, we have plan two. And then plan three is going into 2-month lockdown. And that's obviously, you can't plan for that. And I think a lot of big companies, beginning, Gareth, a lot of big companies, you know, the support has been very quiet.
Mm.
And we're a medium-sized company. So there's obviously the landlords, you know, we've requested from the landlords just feeling the waters. And they obviously come back with a standard. There's nothing in your contract that says that you can delay payment. Huh. But we will blah, 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 support you if you can, and we're meeting, et cetera, et cetera. So from that side, staff are protected in some way with UIF.
Yeah.
But on a big business side, you've got to see, you know, when the shit hits the fan, if we go longer than 3 weeks, then you're going to have, these guys are going to come to the party, because a lot of big companies are seriously geared. And
your factory's closed at the moment, though, right?
That's right, yeah. So our factory's closed.
And if you did want to reopen on the 17th, and if we all could go back to work on the 17th, are there going to be delays in terms of suppliers? Because the whole world is in shutdown, so there could be places that you would normally get your raw materials and your supplies from that might not be able to deliver on time.
Yeah, that's a reality. What we have done is we've planned from a stock perspective, because if you can understand, we've had a three week in production.
Mm.
So we have that stock available, and we have enough stock probably to last another 3 months. We've got stock on the water because China started to manufacture again. We get aluminium extrusions from China.
Yeah.
So they started to manufacture about a month ago. So at least that's a little bit online, or at a lower intensity, but they sort of half their forces back.
Yeah.
So we have that from a stock perspective. And also we built a lot of orders and worked overtime last week. So what that meant was we try to get ahead of the game so we can deliver earlier, you know, hoping we come back on the 17th, we can deliver earlier. And then there is going to be that lag, Gareth, you're 100% right. There's going to be a two-week lag because that's how long it takes us to manufacture, as an example, a shutter.
Yeah.
And then blinds we can manufacture very quickly. So there will be a bit of a lag in terms of income post coming back to lockdown. So these are all factors we need to take into account. And I suppose planning future, we would hope maybe the building industry and all of us would work together in pushing out the December lock break, you know, because of what's happened now.
Yeah, we're going to have to sacrifice a holiday somewhere else if we're going to, yeah. We're going to be forced to stay home and try to work from home now. Well, good luck to you guys. You know, we all need to make a way through this, and we all need to succeed. And one of the big focuses for us is talking to business owners so that we can all share some info. It sounds like you guys have done some incredible scenario planning. Good luck, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Good. Excellent. Thanks very much, Gareth. Thanks very much, Mbelo. We speak soon, eh?
Don't go away, because we've got Blind History coming up next, and you don't want to miss that. That's a brand new episode in season 3 of Blind History. It's episode 3, and it's about the wives of King Henry VIII. If you had to marry one of those women, who would it be?
I'll probably marry Anne.
Anne of Cleves, the ugliest one. Or Anne
Boleyn. No, Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn. Elizabeth's mom.
All right. Thanks, Ant. We'll check in with Blind History coming up next. That's Anthony Medera. Anthony is the MD of Taylor Blinds and Shutters. And we are also grateful to our three Epson entrepreneurs who joined us before that for sharing their own entrepreneurship journey and the difficulties that they're having at the moment. If you've got a story, and if you also want to share your story, please email us, gareth@cliffcentral.com. We won't be able to fit everybody in, but I'd like to talk to you and find out whether you've got a plan. Maybe you can help someone else to figure out their plan. And all along the way, we'll help each other. So yeah. We're here for you, and not just for business owners and entrepreneurs, but we're here for you too if you're an employee, somebody who's looking for work. You're somebody who's concerned about what your kids, your wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend might be doing for a living in the next couple of months. We'll hopefully have some answers for you. We'll figure it out together. So don't worry. You're not on your own. Blind History, Season 3, Episode 3. It's time to hit this where it hurts. And coming up after that, Living in Lockdown, a brand new episode with none other than the man who started Mikasa with two other gentlemen. He is Jay Something, and we caught up with him, found out how he's doing in lockdown. So all of that on the way. Plenty to keep you busy and to keep you interested and amused and entertained this morning. CliffCentral.com.
First wife, Catherine of Aragon.
Divorce.
Second wife, Anne Boleyn. Third wife, Jane Seymour.
Dead.
In childbirth.
Fourth wife, Anne of Cleves.
Divorce.
Fifth wife, Catherine Howard. Sixth wife, Catherine Parr.
She survived him.
Blind History Season 3, and time for us to focus on the women. Not just any women, but six mostly unfortunate women who had the dealings of the marriages of Henry VIII, these poor women. So there are a couple of ways that you remember them. The best one is, arrogant boys seem clever, Howard particularly, which is a mnemonic for the different names. Yeah. So A for Aragon, Catherine of Aragon, B for Anne Boleyn, S for Seymour, C for Cleves, Howard obviously is Howard, and P particularly is Parr, Catherine Parr. Mm. Or you can remember divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived. And then there's two nice rhymes. King Henry VIII To 6 wives he was wedded, 1 died, 1 survived, 2 divorced, 2 beheaded. Or, Boleyn and Howard lost their heads, Anne of Cleves he would not bed, Jane Seymour gave him a son but died before the week was done, Aragon he did divorce, which left just Catherine Parr, of course. So, what a story. I mean, yeah. We can laugh about this now, but this must have been horrifying in those days, because the guy really started off as such a prince of the Renaissance. Everybody loved Henry VIII. There wasn't a woman in Europe who didn't want to marry him. Mm. He was the ideal. And his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, was actually betrothed to his brother, Arthur, who I think predeceased him by some years.
Yeah, at the age of 2. They arranged that marriage. Sure. So it was a political marriage.
Not much choice, huh?
Not really. But it was famous marriage because it was Isabel and Ferdinand of Spain. And
their
they were,
daughter, yeah.
Yeah, their daughter. And they were really big in terms of the European landscape. And so that was arranged. He was quite a sickly guy, Arthur. And he died 6 months into the marriage. And she went on to say there was a lot of talk about it because obviously the Pope had to get involved, et cetera, et cetera, to get her to then marry his brother.
Yeah, and she said that they'd never consummated the marriage.
Correct, that's
she
what
and
she
Arthur.
Said.
She said that they'd been married for such a short time, they were really just known to each other, but they hadn't actually been with each other. And therefore it would be okay for her to marry Henry. And Henry later turned that on her when he wanted the divorce and used it as grounds for him to be able to get divorced from her because it was immoral for him to have married his brother's wife. So for many years, it was his longest marriage. It
25
was okay.
years.
It was fine.
Yeah.
And then once he saw Anne Boleyn at court and thought, she's quite hot, he was ready to throw her under the bus.
Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't unusual that kings and nobility had many mistresses. And he actually, funny enough, didn't have as many as his contemporaries. It wasn't something that he did, but he did have some. He was looking for marital bliss. He was really looking for that love, along with the fact that he needed a male heir. Because, I mean, they knew that if a female had to take the heir, they'd be married off, and, you know, that would be the end of England.
Yeah.
And even Elizabeth, who was his daughter, she never married. That was so drummed into her.
Well, I'm sure that she was devastated by the fact that her own mother had been sent to the tower to have her head cut off. But Catherine of Aragon seems to have been a very interesting woman. She was devout. She was very pious. She was a good Catholic her whole life long. She did her best to raise Mary as well as she could. She was never spiteful or nasty about Henry. She always said nice things about him. She was quite emotional about the fact that he didn't want to be with her anymore. And she seems to have been a very dignified princess and then later queen throughout her life.
Yeah, and I think she had quite a hard life in between Arthur and marrying Henry. She just was sort of like an exile on a very low amount of money, et cetera, and waiting for some decision to be made. Then Henry's father said, let's call it off, because he'd already had the dowry. And then he died. And then Henry said, no, I want to marry her. But she never wanted the divorce. She fought so much against it. And it became ugly, I suppose.
Well, the Pope got involved, as you mentioned. Lots of horrible things happened. But this poor woman. So she eventually said, you know, I'm the queen of earthly queens. Shakespeare supposedly called her the queen of earthly queens. And she really was the reason that the Roman Catholic Church broke away from the later established Church of England. And it was probably such an important part of English history that we think of it as just being the first of Henry's marriages to break down. But the whole reason that broke down is because he was unwilling to put up with any resistance. He had Anne Boleyn in his sights and he just wanted to marry her. And she wouldn't let him sleep with her until she was married to him.
7 years.
But they did have Mary. So Catherine and Henry had a daughter called Mary, who later became Mary I. Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
Tried to bring Catholicism back to England. She was very hurt and wounded by the way that her mother had been treated.
Mm.
And she's been treated very unfairly by history too, because most of the historians who wrote about her reign were Protestants, and they liked to paint an ugly picture of her. But really, this poor Catherine, I mean, she was even nice to Elizabeth. She tried to be a model person in everything that she did, and poor old Henry just discarded her.
On her deathbed, she said to Mary, please listen to your father. Listen to your father, stay loyal to your father, the king. She was an incredible woman. She really was, and she did a lot for England.
Now, Anne was one of her courtiers.
Correct.
Anne was in her retinue, and Anne was very pretty. She came from a reasonably good family in the south of England. And Henry took one look at her and decided, I want some of that. He was quite a, you know, a horny old bastard already at that stage. He wasn't old, really, when he started to take a shine to Anne, and Catherine hadn't provided him with a male heir, which was one of his main grievances against her, and he thought God was punishing him for marrying his brother's wife. So he devised a way to see more and more of Anne, and at this point, Catherine must have known that was going on. But Anne would not relent. She would not give up anything until she had a ring on her finger.
Yeah.
Like exactly. The Beyonce song goes.
Yeah. But she was vivacious. She was charismatic. She was bubbly. He was so attracted to that. But she was also very fiery. And they had an extremely tumultuous relationship until she was beheaded. So it was incredible.
You just brought that in there.
Yeah.
Gently, like the axe falling on her thin neck. Also, her sister had been a lover of Henry's for some time. So it's all very incestuous. And she did provide him with a child, and he was very excited. He said, oh, finally, the male heir I've been waiting for. Turned out it was Elizabeth, and he was from that moment on, he was just not interested in her. Because, of course, it could never have been Henry's fault that he wasn't able to father a child.
Exactly.
A son.
100%.
It was always the woman.
Yeah.
And he had to go through six of them to prove it.
And that was the way he lived his life.
Sure.
Nothing was his fault.
No.
But you know that the heir from Henry was Elizabeth I. What an incredible monarch. It was one of the greatest monarchs in English history, Elizabeth I.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, there was nothing wrong with Mary. They were both incredible in terms of what they did and who they were.
Strong women. In a time where there weren't a lot of women who were allowed to rise to the top.
But Anne obviously was wrongfully...
Well, she was accused of high treason, adultery, incest. And after Elizabeth's coronation as queen later on, Anne was venerated as a martyr and a heroine of the English Reformation. And over the centuries, she has inspired or been mentioned in numerous artistic and cultural works.
The incest was supposedly having sex with her brother, and that was where that came from. It was trumped-up charges from Thomas Wolsey, I believe. And what happened during the trial... the set-up trial, they got a lesser sentence. I think there's three things you do. You hang, you draw, you quartered. They were allowed to be beheaded. And also they did a big favor to Anne in that they got the best
executioner
in Europe to come. He never made a mistake.
Lucky her.
They basically got off scot-free.
They thought they'd had a good time.
Exactly.
God,
so that was very unfair. And I think if we look at all six wives, the first three are the most well-known. And Anne, out of the three... is the most well-known. There's been movies about it. It is very sad to end a life so young.
Jane Seymour is quite well-known too, as you mentioned, and she was one of Anne Boleyn's ladies-in-waiting. So Henry just really wasn't prepared to make a huge effort and go and look for a princess at this point or a queen. He would just take from whoever was in the queen's retinue, and then it's strongly believed that she was the mistress who was disposing of Anne the whole time behind the scenes. And Jane married the king 10 or 11 days after Anne had her head cut off. So it didn't take long.
No.
And she, of course, was able to bring him, finally, his male heir, Edward. And Henry was overjoyed, but the birth was complicated. And she actually died 12 days later because of postpartum complications. And this apparently caused her husband such unbelievable grief. She was the only queen to receive a proper queen's burial, and when he died, he wanted to be buried next to her.
Next to her. And I think he mourned for 6-7 days. And for him, that's a long time. I think it was long ago.
What a monster. But the child did survive and took over eventually from Henry as his male heir, but didn't last long.
No, he was also sickly.
Yeah.
But Jane Seymour was the exact opposite, because Anne used to have some serious fights, and it was a very abrasive relationship. Whereas Jane was very submissive, but she knew how to push the right buttons with him.
So Henry took a little bit of a break. He didn't have a wife for a short while, but then for 6 months or so, which for him was a long time, he decided he wanted to marry another princess, so they went looking this time. And they went out into Europe, and there were some really awful German princesses, but what they would do is they'd have their portraits painted by Holbein or whoever, and they'd always look prettier in the portraits. So he saw a portrait and said, this Anne of Cleves, she looks like a good bet. I think I'll have her. And when she arrived, he had to go through with the marriage. But having seen her, he called her a Flanders mare and said, this is the most hideous bitch I've ever seen. I need to be rid of her. And he was probably thinking of beheading and all the rest of it, and someone probably talked him down. And he just gave her a bunch of money and said, go and live in the country and just leave me alone. I can't bear to look at you. Did I leave anything out?
There's a story that goes that she was sitting in her rooms looking out the window at the jousting that was going on downstairs. And then in came this entourage. There was five or six people, and they were all dressed in costume.
Mm.
And they came up to her, and the one completely in costume offered her a flower, something to that effect. And she said, no, thank you, in very proper German accent. But that was the king.
All right.
He just said, no, get rid of that woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So even though she didn't know it was him.
Yeah, she didn't know it was him.
I don't want your flower.
Yeah, but you know, he was quite sensitive.
Yeah, he was. He was very sensitive. Now, she actually lasted the longest. She outlived all the other wives, and she died last of all of them.
And you know that they became good friends.
Well, friends, but he was not interested in her romantically or sexually. Then he married Catherine Howard, who was very cute, and she was related to the Dukes of Norfolk. And she was pretty, and she danced, and all of these things. By this stage, of course, it's worth mentioning, Henry himself had become obese.
Mm.
He had terrible...
ulcers.
Ulcers, that's right. He wasn't an attractive proposition.
Nobody wanted to marry him, buddy.
No one. I mean,
especially after four wives.
Right. She came along, and she was pretty, but she was really stupid.
She was. And she slept with a lot of people prior to marriage. Prior to marriage. And she did, you know, the world just happened to her. Oh, I'm sorry.
She really did.
Yeah.
She was really not doing herself any favors, because all the people who spread rumors about her affairs, she just didn't have the wherewithal to figure out how to counter them. And Henry found out about it. He found out about a guy called Thomas Culpepper.
Yeah.
In 1541.
This Brissot was courted.
Oh, my God. And she was sent off to the gallows as well.
Correct.
Had her head cut off.
And he didn't want to believe it, old Henry. Because he was really infatuated by her.
Yeah.
But she was having affairs. There was all sorts of noise in her rooms. And so luckily she wasn't hung. She got away with murder, I suppose. She also was beheaded. So they were quite kind to her.
Now, Catherine Parr is the last one.
And the cleverest.
Of these six. Yeah, she was by far the cleverest. She really was like a nursemaid to Henry, because at that stage he was old and sick. He wasn't coping well. He didn't have much of a sexual appetite. So she was like a nurse. She would bring him warm meals. She would, you know, wash him. She would pet him, teach him some Latin. She'd read the Bible to him. Nice things. She really looked after him like a nursemaid would. And he was forever loyal to her until he died. And then when he died, she must have gone, whew.
Yeah, dodged a bullet.
She got to live her life.
But she died the next year.
Yeah.
In childbirth. Got away from King Henry with her head intact. And then she married Jane Seymour's brother.
Yes, that's right. Interestingly enough, she also was not very successful in terms of pursuing any career of her own. But she was very good to both Mary and Elizabeth and to Edward. So she was like a kind of a good stepmother.
Yeah.
And most of the fairy tales talk about evil stepmothers, but she was a nice one.
And she actually got both Mary and Elizabeth back into succession.
Yeah, into Henry's favor. Because they'd been cut out completely, right?
They'd been cut out completely. And I mean, that changed history. So he's looking for a male heir, which led to him leaving the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And then he didn't want anything to do with Mary and Elizabeth, but ultimately with Catherine Parr, they came back in, and they were excellent monarchs after that.
Well, Henry didn't really know how to choose them, but then these women didn't have much say in it either, so we can't be mean to them when we look back on history. Maybe Catherine Howard, you can be a little bit crueler too. But they were all related to him distantly, you know that.
Yes.
They all had a common ancestor in King Edward I of England, all of them. So he was actually related to all his wives.
And he was actually the closest to Howard, second cousin or third cousin or something like that.
So, I mean, all in all, this guy was just an awful piece of work. He wasn't easy to be married to. He expected miraculous things to happen. He was a love-struck teenager at heart.
Correct.
Never really got rid of that.
What's sad about it is that it was massive promise. It's often like that. So it was his darling. Some people commented they've yet to see such a handsome king as Henry VIII. He played tennis. He was a musician, a very, very handy musician. He wrote a song that became
famous.
Greensleeves,
he
wrote. That's it. Exactly, Greensleeves. So he was extremely talented. He was a great sportsman. And actually, that rotten leg came from him jousting and he fell off his horse. So
rotten leg.
Yeah. So that's quite sad. He ended up being this obese, grumpy tyrant.
They buried him in a coffin that was almost octagonal. He was so fat.
Yeah. That's sad.
And you know that when they were taking his coffin to St. George's Chapel in Windsor, there had been a soothsayer who'd predicted that one day Henry would be eaten by dogs on the street. And while they were taking his coffin to St. George's Chapel, apparently it burst. Jeez. And a whole lot of stuff poured out. And the dogs started licking it. And they thought that's a prophecy that's come true.
Come true. Sure, that's horrible.
Pretty rough. Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The next episode is about one of Rome's greatest emperors, Augustus.
Look at Anne of Cleves. Where she came from, they were hard-drinking German, duchy. And she was very unusual that she didn't like to drink and she knitted. So it seemed like she was very boring. And I don't think that the artist survived either, to be honest, after he painted that picture. CliffCentral.com